Ever notice how sometimes in law, to really get the whole picture, you have to zoom in on one specific case? Well, we're going to do that today with Roe v. Yaro v. United
Oh,
States.
yeah. Roe v. Yaro.
Big one.
Huge. It's a Supreme Court decision, and this one's from way back in 1957.
Yeah.
Still super relevant, though, when we talk about criminal procedure,
Definitely.
because it really shines a light on that tension you always have between the government needing to get information, intelligence, and an individual's right to actually get a fair trial.
Yeah.
So think of this deep dive today as like your shortcut to grasping a situation where secrecy just clashed right up against the demands of justice.
Absolutely. And this isn't just some old case that doesn't matter anymore. Like the things that were decided in Roe v. Yaro, the principles that came out of it, I mean, those still have a real impact on how cases are handled today.
Still cited all the time.
All the time.
Okay, so let's get into it. So the scene is set in Chicago, 1954.
Chicago.
And we've got Albert Roe v. Yaro. He's facing federal drug charges.
Specifically, selling heroin to somebody the government is only calling John Doe, and also for transporting it.
All right.
But here's where it gets really interesting, and this is something for you all to really pay attention to. This wasn't your run-of-the-mill informant situation.
Right. John
This
Doe.
guy wasn't just phoning it in with a few tips, you know.
Yeah.
He was right there in the middle of this supposed heroin sale, really hands-on.
What's so interesting here, and what students should really focus on, is the level of John Doe's like participation. Like he wasn't just passively knowing stuff, he was present during the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
And to really paint the full picture here, law enforcement, they even had an officer like hidden in the trunk of Doe's car,
Oh, wow.
listening in
Wild.
to the conversation happening between Doe and Roe v. Yaro.
Can you imagine?
Crazy.
So, Roe v. Yaro goes to trial, and of course, his defense team wants to know who this John Doe is.
Right. They have
I
to.
mean, come on, the guy was a major player in all of this.
Yeah.
They had to be able to question him, but the prosecution. They flat out refused to give up his name.
Stonewalled.
Yeah, and the court backed them up.
Yeah.
So Roe v. Yaro, he's convicted, and then the appellate court says, yeah, the conviction sticks.
And this is where it gets really interesting in terms of like thinking about due process and how the system works. Because the question becomes, how on earth can someone who's a defendant put together a solid defense when they don't even know who this person is? This person who was right there when the crime supposedly happened. It goes right to the heart of our adversarial system.
Yeah.
And I know not everyone listening might be super familiar with that term, but basically it means our legal system is set up as kind of a battle where each side gets to lay out their arguments and their evidence to someone neutral.
Right.
Could be a judge or a jury. And one of the cornerstones of this whole system is that you have the right to confront the witnesses against you.
Yeah.
So it's not really a surprise that this case ended up going all the way to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, it had to.
It had to.
So the fundamental question that Supreme Court had to grapple with was whether keeping John Doe's identity a secret in this specific situation, you know, whether that actually violated Roe v. Yaro's right to a fair trial.
Right.
And as you might have guessed, the court said yes,
They did.
overturned the lower court's decision.
Big decision.
Huge. And their main finding was crystal clear. The government, sure, they've got a legitimate reason sometimes to keep their informants confidential, but that can't be an absolute rule. It's got to give way when the informant's testimony is crucial for the defense to have any shot at a fair trial.
And it's really important to understand here, the court didn't just create this blanket rule that says, oh, informants always have to be identified. They weren't trying to do that.
Yeah.
What they said was judges need to look at each case individually,
Okay.
really carefully weigh the competing interests. On one hand, you've got the government needing secrecy,
Yeah.
but then you've got the defendant needing a fair trial.
So let's break down how this balancing act actually works. What were some of the key factors the court really zeroed in on in Roe v. Yaro's case that made them decide the way they did?
So what the court did was they created what we call the Roe v. Yaro test,
Okay.
and it's got two sides to it. First, they recognize that there's a public interest in protecting informants. And this actually makes sense. If people who are helping law enforcement worry that their name's going to get out, they're a lot less likely to come forward with important information.
Right. Makes sense.
And that would make the job of law enforcement way harder.
Yeah, you can definitely see why the government would want to protect those sources.
Yeah.
But what about Roe v. Yaro? What was so important about his side of the argument?
So on the other side of this, you've got this fundamental need for the defendant to be able to prepare a defense, which means being able to gather evidence, question witnesses, present their side of the story to the court.
Right.
And specifically in Roviara's case, the court said there were three things that tipped the scales in favor of revealing John Doe's identity.
Okay, let's hear them. What were those three factors that really stuck out in this case?
Well, first, and this is a big one, John Doe. He was the only person besides Roviaro who was actually involved in the sale of the heroin that led to that first charge.
Yeah.
He wasn't just someone who had given information beforehand. He was part of the deal going down.
Right, right.
And then the second thing, Doe was the only witness who could say whether what the officer said about what happened during that sale was true or not.
So without him, the court only had the police side of the story.
Exactly. Right. And then the third thing the court pointed out was that Doe's testimony might have been super important to figure out what Roviaro's state of mind was when it came to that second charge.
The transporting.
The knowingly transporting the heroin.
Right. And why was that whole knowingly thing so important to the court's decision?
Because for someone to be found guilty of knowingly transporting something like heroin, the prosecution, they have to prove the person knew they were transporting it. If Roviaro didn't know, if he was set up, if he didn't know what was in the package, then that could be a valid legal defense.
Oh, I see.
And the court said John Doe, as someone who was right there in the thick of it, he might have information about whether Roviaro actually knew. Like, his testimony could have backed up a claim of entrapment.
Right.
Where Doe might have tricked Roviaro into committing a crime he wouldn't have done otherwise. Or, like the court said, Doe could have shed light on whether Roviaro even knew what he was transporting at all.
Right.
So without being able to ask Doe these questions, Roviaro was really limited in how he could fight the charges against him.
And that just doesn't seem fair.
No, it doesn't.
Now, I remember reading that the decision in this case wasn't unanimous, was it?
No, it wasn't. Justice Clark, he wrote a dissenting opinion.
Okay.
And his main point was that Roviaro probably did know who John Doe was because there were hints that they'd maybe worked together before. So because of that, you know that they probably knew each other. Justice Clark didn't buy the idea that keeping Doe's name secret was actually hurting Roviaro's defense.
Interesting.
He also pointed out that Roviaro's lawyer didn't specifically use entrapment as a defense during the trial, which made him think that the majority of the court was basically inventing defenses for Roviaro after the fact.
Okay.
Like they were making it up as they went along.
So Justice Clark's perspective was more like, hey, we've got all this evidence that points to Roviaro being guilty, so let's not bend over backwards for a guy he actually called a dope peddler.
Yeah, he didn't mince words.
Right. He was really worried that the majority's decision would make it harder for law enforcement to use informants in future cases.
He was thinking about the bigger picture.
Okay, so this case gives us the Roviaro balancing test.
Mm-hmm.
And for all of you listening out there, the big takeaway is that courts, they have to weigh two things.
Mm-hmm.
The public's interest in making sure information can get to law enforcement, and the individual defendant's right to be able to prepare defense and get a fair trial.
Yeah.
So what are some of the specific factors that courts are looking at today when they use this test?
Okay, so some of the things they're considering are, how serious was the crime?
Okay.
What defenses might the defendant have, like we talked about, entrapment, or maybe they didn't actually know something.
Right.
Then there's, what role did the informant actually play? Like, were they a key player, like John Doe, or did they just give a tip early on?
Right.
And then maybe the most important thing is, how crucial is the informant's testimony likely to be to the defendant being able to actually make their case?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And so how does this Roviaro principle actually work in practice today? Can you think of a common scenario where this comes up?
Yeah, all the time. You see Roviaro cited in cases where someone's trying to figure out if they should reveal the identity of a confidential informant.
Okay.
So for example, if an informant just gives a tip that starts an investigation or helps get a search warrant,
right,
courts usually aren't going to force them to give up the informant's name.
Mm-hmm.
Because in those situations, the informant's just not seen as that central.
They're more on the sidelines.
Yeah. But if, like with John Doe, the informant was right there involved in what led to the charges, and their testimony could be super important for the defendant to argue something like mistaken identity or entrapment, or that they didn't have the the mental state required for the crime.
Right.
Then the courts are much more likely to say, yeah, you got to tell us who this informant is.
Okay.
The key question is always, Is the information this informant has actually relevant and helpful to the defense, or even essential to having a fair trial?
Got it.
So for everyone listening, it's not like courts are always protecting informants no matter what.
Right.
They're making a really specific judgment call based on how crucial that information is to the defendant having a fair defense.
In that particular case.
In that particular case, yeah.
So really what Roviaro did was put a limit on the government's ability to keep things secret when it comes to law enforcement.
It was a big check on their power.
Yeah, because it forces courts to balance the need for secrecy against the idea that our justice system have to be fair.
And that's a fundamental principle.
It is.
Roviaro made it clear that the government can't just keep information hidden, especially if that information could stop someone accused of a crime from being able to properly defend themselves.
Right.
It highlights that due process isn't just about following the rules in court. It's about making sure everyone has an equal chance.
Right, a level playing field.
Exactly, where the person who's accused can actually challenge the evidence against them.
So think about this. How might this balancing act from Roviaro, you know, this weighing of the public's interest against individual rights when it comes to confidential sources, how might that apply in legal situations beyond just drug offenses?
Yeah, good question.
Think about national security cases or maybe environmental crimes where informants are involved.
Interesting.
What are the good things about using balancing tests like that? And what are the risks? I mean, it's complicated.
It is.
There are definitely pros and cons, and it's something to really think about because this issue goes way beyond just this one case.
Yeah, a lot to unpack there.
Lots to unpack.
Food for thought.